Welcome to the BJ and Bucher podcast. I believe this is number 6 in the series. It is an endless one. It is going to go on forever. I am Rick Bucher. He is BJ Armstrong, still in the country, about to leave. And I get the sense that the way our conversation prior has gone, that you may need to leave the country for a couple days because this could get heated. We may need to be separated by a continent. How are you, BJ?
I'm doing well. I don't know what that means. I don't know what that says, but okay. Hello to you too, Rick Bucher. How you doing?
One of the things that I admire about you in getting to know you when you were a player is that you were what we call an early adopter. You like to know what was going on. You like to understand everything. You were not afraid of the latest techniques or exploring. You had a respect for the past, but you always had an eye to the future. With that in mind, I need to know why technology is a thing that you run from, that you seem to have a inherent distrust of all things technical. Where does that stem from? Because it seems to be out of character from the BJ Armstrong that I at least got to know initially.
Well, I do embrace technology. I do welcome technology. I do respect technology. But the thing, Mr. Bucher, I have to remain human.
Nobody's trying to turn you into a cyborg.
The human experience requires you and I to have an exchange.
Right.
Interact with each other face to face. So right. no matter what I do in my job, it requires cell phones, emails, text messages, WhatsApp, Twitter, all these things. It doesn't replace the face-to-face meeting. Okay, so in the end, no matter what I do and technology does, it's never going to replace the one element that is essential. I have to be there face-to-face with the client and speak with these people face-to-face, and nothing will ever replace that.
Honestly, in all seriousness, I agree 100% with that, that this job cannot be done through that relationships and face-to-face meetings do indeed matter. I just want to know, how much have you learned about technology since we started doing this podcast? Because I feel like the curve is pretty damn steep.
Well, I'm technologically challenged.
Okay.
I am challenged with technology.
Yeah. That's news to our listeners. That's not news to me.
I work with a lot of young people, and these people are great. That's all they do. They're on their phones. They're on Apple TV and Netflix, and I don't know any of that. I don't know any of that.
Right? So just so people understand what the run-up to our podcast, and then we'll get on with the subjects that we're going to tackle. I want to pull the curtain back a little bit. So this is how it goes when we set up to do a podcast. I dial in. I send the links that BJ needs. I dial him up so that we can video conference, so we can see each other when we're not in the same room. And about, 2-3 minutes after that happens, my phone rings, and then 2 or 3 minutes after that, I hear, hold on, just a second. And then I hear in the background, hey, can I borrow Snyder? Where's Lindsay? Can I get Smith in here? I just need somebody to do this one thing. That's the pre-podcast broadcast. Now, we can move on. You wanted to, among the subjects that we're going to hit, we want to talk about Team USA. You have a variety of clients actually playing not only for Team USA, but also just in the Olympics in general in men's basketball. And you are headed to Rio very shortly. And I also want to talk about just some of the exotic places that you've gone or if you wanted to go as a result of basketball. But you wanted to start with Summer League. And even though it is already been several weeks since Summer League is over, this is something that you can't get out of your system. So what is it about Summer League that you feel compelled you need to discuss?
Great question. And every year for the last 25 years, I've attended Summer League and watched Summer League in some capacity.
Wait a minute, 25 years?
Yeah, whether really? I participate.
Wait, going back to like Long Beach State and
Long Beach State?
And, you know, Utah, I actually, Salt Lake City?
I've actually participated as a player. As a young kid, I played there at Long Beach State. I've played, you know, summer league basketball. I've watched it for many years. I've done it as an executive. Now I'm watching it as an agent. And every year I walk away from summer league for the last, this has been about the last 15 years, okay? I ask, what is the role of summer league and what are we trying to really get accomplished with summer league? And since we moved to Las Vegas, as you know, Rick, I say it to you every year, why am I in Las Vegas watching summer league? I'm willing to discuss it. And every year I'm asking, what is its purpose? Why are we here? What are we trying to get accomplished now that's going to actually improve the game of basketball? And why are we doing it in July?
Before we get to the purpose of Las Vegas, I wonder what did you get out of it as a player? What benefit did it provide you as a player?
As a young kid, the thing that I benefited from it was I actually had an opportunity to get coached. That was very important for young people.
Who was your summer league coach?
Let's cut right through it. I go watch these games in the summer league. And then I refer back to my own experience in summer league. When I played in summer league, here were the coaches. I had the benefit of Phil Jackson, Johnny Bach, Tex Winters, coaching me for a full summer. Not the assistant coach, not the guy who is the fourth assistant who now is just coaching the team in the summer like I watch now. Phil Jackson actually took the time to work with a 20-year-old kid every single day in Long Beach, California, and worked with me every day. Tex Winter actually took the time to teach me how to actually interpret the tape. Not that he is being negative every time he points out. No, he taught me and showed me how to actually watch tape, not only of yourself, but the team, the other players, and things that you can explore within the game. Johnny Bach actually taught me how to take notes during the game and actually have a scouting report for myself, independent of the team scouting report. Now, I watch these games over the summer now. Why aren't the head coaches coaching these players? Because if I'm the owner of the team, I'm paying these coaches millions and millions and millions of dollars. Why am I turning them over to some guy who's a fourth or fifth assistant who's never coached in the game? So my question is, what is the purpose of having summer league if I'm not going to go and take advantage of the opportunity to have these players out here playing if the coach is not going to coach them? What are we doing? I vividly remember playing against Larry Brown, Pat Riley, Hubie Brown, and summer league, Larry Brown, Lenny Wilkins. These guys were experimenting during the summer league and using this as their canvas to explore and teach, take opportunity to see what works, what didn't work. So when the vets came to camp, everything was all ready to go. I go to summer league now. I see guys calling timeouts. I see guys doing things that I go, what? That will never work during the course of a game. Okay. The purpose of summer league is for one thing, to properly evaluate players on your team. That's it. You got to find out who can and can't play. You got to find out who wants to compete, who doesn't want to compete. I'm not here to see a million different players run. I'm not here to see timeouts with 20 seconds to go in a game because that's what we do during a regular season. No, I'm here. This is your environment. This is your opportunity to explore. This is your opportunity for the coach to coach his team, to coach his players, but more importantly, to develop those young players. What we're doing today, I have no idea. I think what we're doing is just creating content, personally. I don't understand what they're doing. I really don't understand.
Well, and based on, I would say if there is anything that's being developed, it's they're attempting to develop the coaches more than they are attempting to develop the players.
Because Say that again, Rick. Because that the Summer League is not there to develop coaches. The Summer League was created to develop the players. And if you're not developing the players, then what are we doing?
Well, in a perfect world, you are correct, because that would best serve the ultimate product, that the fans are seeing. It would behoove teams to develop players ahead of coaches, because as we know, we come to watch the players, not the coaches coach. So I agree with that. Look, I'll get to, you know, where the Las Vegas Summer League has gone and how this has become. And I agree with you. It's become big business. It reminds me of the MIT Sloan Conference that Daryl Morey is ahead of when it comes to the analytics. And I was part of that when it first started, and it was in an auditorium. It was in a classroom, basically. A large classroom was where the first ones were held at MIT. And you were bringing people together to exchange ideas. And I was on a panel. I led a panel with Ray Allen and a number of people from different interests. But the beauty of it was you were all coming together, and you knew analytics were becoming part of the league. Using numbers, using advanced statistics was becoming part of it. But it was a conversation about, like, how does this work? And from a player's perspective, how do we make it work? How do we make it useful? But it was an exchange of ideas. And by the second or third year, when the big names were coming in, like Mark Cuban was there, and now you had people that were there with the analytics names, and they were up on up on the stage, and they were on these panels, and they wouldn't answer any questions. They were like, well, I don't want to give that away. That's the secret sauce. And I thought, what are we doing here? The whole idea is that we were coming together to help each other utilize this new information. And there was other stuff. There was, like, the fact that for the viewing experience, like, how do we get Wi-Fi in a building for 20, 30, 40,000 people? Because there was at a time, and even now, it can be difficult to get bandwidth for everybody. But how do we increase the entertainment value for fans? And so, but there was some legitimate conversation, but that went away very quickly. And now it's a job fair. Now it's everything but. Now people go to the MIT Sloan Conference to sell something. I feel as if the Las Vegas Summer League is the exact same thing. It's become big business. Now, I have covered the league long enough that I remember Long Beach State, and I went to Long Beach State for games. It's where I first met Kobe Bryant, coming out of the locker room after his first game. And I was taken by, like, one, how young he was, but how serious he was, and just how fearless he was as far as going out there and wanting to prove what he was capable of. But the real beauty of Long Beach State was that if you took the time to go there, you could have the face-to-face conversations that we talked about. You could get to know the players and the coaches, and it wasn't sound bites and it wasn't interviews. It was just, we're talking basketball. And I gained a tremendous amount of knowledge about who people were and how they approached their jobs. Vegas now, I have the same feeling. Every time, like, I still in my head, I have the image of Vegas as, hey, you know, I'm going to go. It's going to be, I'm going to watch basketball, and I'm going to go and have some good meals, and I'm going to hang at the hotel. And then as soon as I land, it's the reality of Vegas hits me, and I go, I can't believe.
So we can agree. So we can agree that Summer League has become
something else
other than, and its real purpose now is this: providing content for the league and the sponsors. That's all Summer League is doing right now.
I will say, the one thing I still get out of it is, and because I don't have the opportunity, you as an agent watch, what, a lot of college basketball, right? You're probably watching these kids, a lot of these kids, sort of from the time they're in high school, you're conscious of the guys who can play and who you may be keeping an eye on. I, in covering the NBA and the things that I do, don't have the opportunity to do that. So, and I'm not going to watch a couple of college basketball games and pretend like I know a guy's game or I know what they're going to be as pros. The value for me still is in Summer League is when you get to summer league and you take these top talents, you take away the inherent physical advantage they have and the systems that they grew up in college. You take that away. And so you kind of find out how I get the first glimpse of a guy and whether he can make the adjustments. As you said, the things that you ask your clients to do in summer league. Like, I get to see for the first time, how does this guy adjust to a brand new situation? Can he, does he have the requisite skill and IQ to say, I got to figure out how to play this game and how to be successful out here when I'm playing with people that I don't really know, that don't really have my best interests at heart because they are, everybody's kind of competing for a spot. So it's not the kumbaya that that people would like it to be. And you're being coached by guys that are learning how to be head coaches. So that still has its value, but that really is, even having conversations with people is difficult because now there's this new thing in the media where the media watches the media. And if they see you talking to somebody, then it's like, oh, did you see they're talking to somebody? And now if there's a story that comes out, now that you, like, you report something, oh, it's because he got it from so-and-so. And there's this whole backbiting thing that goes on. I feel like, what's his name, Charlie from Charlie Babbitt from Rain Man. It makes me sad. It makes me sad, Ray. It just makes me sad.
Well, I think the Summer League started off as a great tool, but how it's being used now, it's just really disappointing. I'm very disappointed in how we use it. I'm very disappointed in time management of it, because if you're a great player, and all of these people who play in the NBA in their own right are very gifted in some capacity. They're gifted. I mean, there's only 400 people in the world doing it at any given time. These great players, in order to reach your level of excellence, you have to think a different way. You have to maximize every opportunity that you have on the floor. And if you don't think this way, you'll just be another guy playing in the NBA for getting a little cup of coffee a very short time if you don't maximize every opportunity for you to get on the floor. Therefore, this thing bothers me more than anything. Free agency starts July 1st. The GMs can't even come there to evaluate their own teams because they're too busy on the phone talking to me, trying to get free agency going. Why the actual evaluation of their own team, they can't even see because they're talking to me and all the other agents trying to figure out who they can get in free agency. How does that work? Rick, how does that work? So the GM's job is to properly evaluate his team. He can't even go to Vegas. He can't even go to Orlando because he's too busy trying to call me at 11:59 getting ready for the 12 o'clock free agency, which we're reporting live. Who's going where? Who's doing what? You know, that's the big thing now in news. You got to be the first one to report it. It's not whether it's true. So I don't even understand how that works. You know, I don't understand how these head coaches today aren't using this laboratory. It's a laboratory. The summertime is their laboratory to experiment. This is their opportunity to explore and do all the things and try different things so that when training camp starts, and it's for real, we're ready to go. We know what works. We know what doesn't work. And more importantly, these young players that just drafted, actually, they have an opportunity to see this head coach work in a practice run. Why are we not coaching these young players? Why aren't the head coaches not coaching these young players today? Because I'm tired of being one of these old guys. Oh, the game was better then. Well, where I'm from, I don't know, Rick, where you're from. When the substitute teacher is there, it's going to be a different class.
Very true. That's very true.
When the substitute teacher's there, it's going to be a different day. And where I'm from, that's how it is. So why aren't the head guys coaching this team, and why aren't the head guys taking advantage of this opportunity? Because you never get that 19-year-old back at that point again. So why aren't we coaching them? Why aren't we doing what we need to do? Why aren't the GMs there so they can properly evaluate, make the decisions? Then we're always talking about who's doing what. Well, of course he can't make the right decision. He can't even get there to properly see the games live because he's doing something else.
Well, now I do see, and I have talked to GMs at the Summer League, and the head coaches, I don't know how much time they spend there, but generally I've seen, you know, Luke Walton was there at the Lakers games, at least the games that I was there. Tom Thibodeau was there. There were... I saw head coaches there and observing.
Okay, I know where you're going there with this, Rick. I'm going to share something with you that I learned on the first day of the job. This is a true story. My first day on the job in the NBA, I go to practice. And we used to practice at this athletic club called the Multiplex there in Chicago. And anyone that's from Chicago will remember it was this huge complex. I go there and we had to check in at the front door, at the front desk. I go, hey, I'm here. My first day on the job. They wouldn't even let me in. It's a true story. They wouldn't even let me in because they were like, you're too young. Who are you? We don't even know you. They had to go back there and get ask Phil Jackson and at the time Jerry Krause, is there some guy named B.J. Armstrong really here to practice with the Chicago Bulls? They were like, oh yeah, let the guy in. Very first day. This is my introduction to the NBA. Okay, wouldn't even let me in. But here's the thing that I learned that day, and it has stuck with me. They paid me to practice. The NBA paid me to practice because you know why, Rick? I learned that I would play the games for free. The game was the fun part. I played in the NBA and they paid me to practice. They paid me to every day to show up and practice every single day to work on my craft, whether the cameras was on, the cameras was off. Because the games, I was going to do that regardless, Rick. The game, I was going to play for free. Right now, hey, if there's a game on, if I could, I'd play in it. But the thing is, I learned is that they paid me as a professional to practice and be a professional every single day. And I learned that the first day on the job. And once I learned that, yeah, the game is the easy part. Cameras on, popcorn popping, fans are cheering. I'm on the road. People are cheering my name, da, da, da. But what they really paid me to do is come in there at 7 in the morning in the summertime where I could be on vacation and work out and get prepared. Because in the end, that's what I was getting paid to do.
Well, you were as the Chicago Bull. And that was the benefit of you joining the Chicago Bulls. Because as you found out, moving around the league a little bit toward the end of your career, and I can tell you because I was a beat writer for the Golden State Warriors in some pretty down years, light years from where they are now, that the practice or games were not always the easiest thing if you were a Golden State Warrior because, one, they were bad and they were not prepared, and two, practices, who knew what some of those practices? Don Nelson at one point in his career, you never knew. You talk about head coaches running the show. There was a time where Nelly would come in and they'd be there for about 20 minutes and then he'd roll back out. And it would be the assistant coaches running practice. There was some lack of ownership when it came to that. So I didn't think we were going to go here, but I this is something that always intrigues me because there are so many players that I feel, especially top players, they go to organizations or they go to franchises that have a high pick in large part because they weren't very good. They get that high pick because they didn't win a whole lot, and they didn't win a whole lot because there are some issues in the way that they are run and built. You had the great benefit of going to an organization like the Chicago Bulls. Not to take anything away from what you did and who you are, but you went to a great organization that had great players, as I would think, as role models. How, now that you're on the side of being an agent and looking at the strategy of where a guy is going to go and where he could play, both with free agents and whatnot, how important, how vital is the fit for a player going to a place that is going to teach him how to be a pro?
I think you're absolutely correct when you say I was very fortunate to go to a team where there were a group of individuals who was ready to win. The key is we're all individuals with individual talents, and everyone wants to explore what they can and can't do in this league and find out and do that as individuals. Where I was very lucky, I was with a team that was willing to put all that aside because they were ready to win. Everyone in their career at some point, for the most part, okay, I want to be rookie of the year. I love it when they ask every rookie, what do you want to be? No one says, I want to win. I would like to be rookie of the year. I would like to be on the all rookie team. It's always an individual accolades that these young kids want to do. I came into a team that was ready to win. All the awards and all the individual things had already been achieved. All the All-Star games, all of the scoring titles, all of the everything you could do individually, defensive team, offensive team, whatever it is, first team all NBA. When you get to that point as a group, you're only left with what the essence of the game is really all about, winning. So I always encourage, I take very complex things, all these individual things that we do, you know, I want to have endorsements, my brand. That's another
right.
catchword.
Buzzword.
Everyone is working on their brand. No, here's your brand. Here's your brand. Win. Okay. Let's take this very complex world we live in, right? I got Snapchat. I got this Instagram. I got all these things going on. Da-da-da-da-da.
You're not banging on technology right now, are you? No, you're banging on social media.
No, okay. I'm saying here is what everyone wants to be a part of, winning. And when you put winning first, you realize all the other things you're talking about doesn't mean anything. It's very simple. The game is very, very simple. You win, and all the other things will come because of it. Winning covers a multitude of sins. It covers everything else up. There's nothing else going on it in a team sport that will connect all of the people that's involved, especially in basketball. The players, that's one set of group. You have the coaches, that's a group. You have the executives, that's a group, and you have the owner. There's nothing else that will bring all four of those people together and make them say, you know what, we're on the right track, other than winning. So when you understand that the power of winning and the X factor, then you begin to actually see what part can I play in this picture here? What part can I play? And until players understand and value winning and they begin to respect how hard it is to win, then you're gonna pick and choose. Oh well, we need to do this better. We need to do that better. Winning is the thing, though.
So with that in mind, because this sounds like something that I've often said when people have looked at like the Philadelphia situation, where they are trying to collect assets, they're trying to put themselves in position for high draft picks, and people are saying this is like the new model for building a team.
I want you to continue on this, but I want you to listen to yourself. You haven't said anything about winning, assets, new model, all those things. Just only problem I had with the what do they call it? Was it the plan, the process, or whatever?
Trusting the process. Yes.
Okay, was if you are trying to win games, I don't have a problem with that. But don't start telling me you are acquiring assets. You're doing all this, because when does assets and all of those things, how does that account to the people that are there every single night that have to show up and do a job? In the end, we live in real time. Real time happens right now. So all of those players who are playing right now, they have to have an opportunity to win. They have to have that opportunity.
And if they don't?
And if they don't have the opportunity, then you're being disrespectful to the game.
Agreed.
Now, whether you win or not, the responsibility has to be on those gentlemen or women who put those uniform on every night. And that responsibility has to lie with those people. And we have to focus on giving ourselves an opportunity to win. And if you're doing anything else other than focusing on winning, then you've gotten away from the essence. Now we're just like Summer League now. We're just there to create content.
I'm going to play devil's advocate here. The counter argument to that is you have to have talent. You've said it. You've said it yourself. Have to have talent to win.
And without question. Without question.
And that to get that talent, you need to have high draft picks. You need to be able to get that talent. Your chances of getting that talent are greater if you have a higher draft pick than you have a lower draft pick.
Historically, the best players in the NBA have all been drafted in the lottery. Historically.
Correct.
Historically.
So aiming for the lottery in order to acquire that talent and therefore be able to win, people would say, yes, I am sacrificing the present for the future. And whether it was the year... See, I think that I think Greg Popovich tanked one year. I think Greg Popovich tanked the year that they wound up getting Tim Duncan. He did it, but he did it in a way that He wasn't pretending. Like, David Robinson had a back injury. He had guys that had injuries, and he said, you know what? I'm not going to play these guys. And it allowed them to lose at a in a way that they would not have otherwise. And I feel as if there have been teams that have disguised this. We're not trying to win right now, but they've done it in a way that's not damaging to the players that are there.
But then if that is the case, where we're going to call it tanking, let's call it what it is. I need luck. I just need to be luck. Because tanking doesn't secure the fact that you're going to get the number one. Doesn't secure the fact you're going to get the number one pick.
Or that it's going to be a great draft. And the talent is going to be there.
Absolutely. So in the end, let's call the draft what it is. It's lucky. I need to be lucky, people. I really don't know. I really don't know what I'm doing. I really don't know talent. I just need to get lucky. Just call it what it is then. Now, if you're telling me you need to be lucky in order to be good, I can take that. But just because you lose doesn't guarantee that you're going to get the number one pick. And it doesn't guarantee that Tim Duncan is going to be Tim Duncan. It doesn't guarantee that Tony Parker is going to be sitting there with the last pick of the first round. None of this is guaranteed. So tell the people what it is then. I really don't know how to evaluate players. I really don't know what I'm doing. I really don't know, but I need to get lucky. And then once I get lucky, I'm going to start telling you how smart I am. Is that what you're telling me, Rick? Because I don't believe that these guys are losing games because that's going to guarantee them. How do you? I can't even imagine how that conversation would go with your owner. Hey, let's go lose games. And then so that we can get lucky, because we don't even know what pick we're going to get.
Well, I would think that that conversation begins with, okay, this is the money that I'm saving you right now. It becomes, this is the business deal behind it. And we can sell the idea, while we may be losing now, we've sold this many season tickets, and we can sell the idea that, and I will be out there telling everybody every chance I get, we're going to have the number one pick next year.
If that is the case, then I feel a responsibility to tell the fans right now, during this podcast, who can and can't play. Because I'm tired of listening to, we don't know who we're going to draft yet, if that is the case. But what you're telling me is that everyone just needs to be lucky. Because I don't believe it. I can't buy in the fact that luck, that's my plan. I got to get lucky.
Well, no.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
We need to be lucky. And if we get lucky, then we act like we knew what we were doing. No, well, I'm not buying that one. I can't believe that there is an owner who would actually buy into that plan. But if it is, this is a whole brand new game to me. So I feel a responsibility to share with the fans on the podcast who can play and how it's going to translate in the next level. This isn't like brain surgery. This isn't rocket science. This is talking about basketball. Guys can put the ball in the hoop or he can't. That's it. And I'll share that. If it takes more than 2 seconds to see a great player, he's probably not a great player.
That's fair. That's fair.
Takes more than 2 seconds.
But isn't there an issue here now in terms of how young players are that are coming in that you don't really know completely? You don't know completely who they are or what they can become?
Well, if you're lucky, you don't really know. I think if I saw Akeem Olajuwon at 18, I think I could see him. And I think if I saw a young Ralph Sampson.
But here's the thing.
I saw Patrick Ewing at 17 years old. He was Patrick Ewing when I first saw him at BC basketball camp as a 16 or 17-year-old. There was no difference between Patrick Ewing then. He was dominating and blocking my shot then, and he was blocking my shot and dominating when he was with the Knicks. Okay. Like, how hard is that to see?
Okay, so but you're talking about the elite players. For me, the secret to being a good, great GM in building a team is not being able to get the first player or the second player. It's to be able to get the fifth player, the sixth player, the seventh player, the eighth player. And that's where finding guys that work with all the other players that you have that fit what you want to do and have the temperament, fit the chemistry of your team, do all of that. To go get a BJ Armstrong that fits with Scottie Pippen and with Michael Jordan and with Horace Grant. Like, that to me is where the GM really earns his money. And I don't know that you can always do that by like immediately seeing a guy's talent immediately? Unless, are you saying that maybe that one element that you're looking for, you see that right away?
Again, this is, since this is the podcast, I want to share the people what I've learned over the years. I want to be, when I was an executive, I wanted to be the master of the obvious, the master of it. I didn't want to draft Todd Fuller and miss Kobe Bryant.
Okay. Just as an example.
I didn't want to be the guy who missed Tracy McGrady's talent. I didn't want to be the guy who drafted Michael Jordan third. I didn't want to miss Kevin Garnett. I didn't want to miss Draymond Green, for instance.
So what's the difference between the guys that do miss and the guys who don't? I get that. But do they not see the talent, or are they not going to see the talent?
I don't know. All I wanted to be was the master of the obvious. Because when you're the master of the obvious, if you're looking for great talent, you're going to see great talent. Now, I'm not trying to create something that's not there.
You're not projecting?
I saw Kobe Bryant. I was still a player in the league. And I remember hearing about Kobe Bryant when I was in the NBA around, this was like the mid-90s, I think. All right, when did he come in the league? 90-something.
I remember. Double-check that.
Yeah, 95 or 96, somewhere. I remember vividly the players that played in Philadelphia saying, it's this kid at Laura Marion that can play in the NBA right now. This was the NBA guys talking. Who are you talking about? I remember, like, who was he talking about? And I remember asking coaches who were friends of mine in collegiate level how good he was. And I didn't find one coach who didn't tell me he was hands down the best player they had seen. Now, to me, it was obvious. And I was still playing. Now, how he slips to, where did he go in the draft? 13?
13th. 1996 draft.
Now, maybe on the information highway of the executives, it was something different. But where the players was at that was playing against this young kid and the people who saw him,
they already knew.
It was the master of the obvious. And everyone, I remember I was in Chicago when Kevin Garnett came through there. There was not one person in the city of Chicago who said Kevin Garnett couldn't play, who had seen all the great players who had came through Chicago, Isaiah Thomas, Mark McGuire, all of them. And they all said the same thing. This might be one of the best ones that ever come through here. Now, how the other guys and the executives was missing him, I don't know. Maybe there is something going on that I wasn't aware of. I, BJ Armstrong, just wanted to be the master of the obvious, which is when you see talent, you go get it. Because you don't see exceptional talent all the time. Do I see BJ Armstrongs and them type of players? Yeah, I see them all the time. But when you have exceptional talent and you could sprinkle in hard work with it, now you look like the guy you're saying everybody wants to be, the genius. I didn't want to be a genius. I just wanted to be the master of the obvious. If I saw Magic Johnson walking down the street, I just wanted to say, hey, man, I think that guy can play. And then I could sprinkle in all these other things around it. And then talk about what I saw. Oh, and create these illusions and stories and be a great interview. You can't tell. I saw Magic Johnson as a high school kid. I was a kid, and I could see that he was the best player. Okay. All right. So there were, to me, what's hard about this? Like, every time, Rick, you and I go to a gym and we play a pickup game, you immediately
know who can play.
That's why I'm always saying, as an exercise, I would love to put the 30 GMs in an open gym without the analytics to see who really know who can play and who can't play. Forget the process. No, let's go to the gym and just go pick a team and let's see who can do it on the spot. Freestyle, like a rap battle. Let's just do it a freestyle just to see. That would be fun.
You know how many GMs right now in the league would be terrified
to be put in that situation? Talk about shooting percentages and then, you know, real three-point percentages.
But you know what? Here's the problem. Here's the problem I have with that is that I see very good people like Hubie Brown. Hubie Brown, when he does a broadcast, I don't want to hit on Hubie Brown, but even coaches when they're at the microphone, like, what do they do? Somebody asks a question. What do? They look down at the box score. They look down at the box score to answer the question. I'm thinking, you just coached this game. Like, you don't need the box score. You don't need the numbers. But everybody wants to, in this day and age, it seems like they want to protect themselves. They need to have numbers. They need to have something. And we both know. Hubie Brown knows the game. Hubie Brown told me something that I'll never forget, because I always wondered, like, the number one thing is to get guys to buy in to what you're trying to do as a team, as a collective. And so with guys having money and having fame and having everything kind of taken care of, how, as a coach, how do you get a guy to buy into something that was greater than himself? How do you get a guy to work? And Hubie told me that he would make a promise to each guy. He would say, look, give me your heart. Give me what you can give me. And I promise you that when you leave, we will have given you something when you leave that will make you a better player than when you got here. You will have something that you will take with you that will make you a better player. And I thought, you know what? That makes perfect sense. If I'm a player, I'm buying in. He's giving me something I can take with me that is going to serve me for the rest of my career. I'm with this guy. I understood then why guys played for Hubie Brown. That made a ton of sense for me. So when you have guys like that who know the game, who understand the psychology of the game, why are we going to the box score? Why are we going to percentages to explain a game that is not defined by the freaking box score?
Well, I love that. I'm glad you asked. And it reminds me, they go to the, and I say they, the coaches go to that. I have a term for it. I call them video coaches. I got to take a look at the film before I can really answer that. See, now, let me give a real life translation of that. I really couldn't tell you what was going on during the game, so I got to watch it again before I can say what I probably should have done when the game was going on. Okay. Because what most of these people are doing is they're coaching numbers and they're coaching percentages and they're coaching their system. They're not coaching the game. Every player that ever played a game understands that some nights you might not have it. But that's not an excuse for you not getting the job done. Rick, you might not have it tonight, but guess what? There's a game being played and I got to figure out how to get the job done. Therefore, I got to make adjustments on the fly to get the job done. Don't tell me how rough it is out there in the sea, Rick. Just bring that ship in. Now, when you find players that have that mentality, then and only then can you come out there and compete every night. Oh, my jump shot wasn't going tonight. No, don't tell me about your jump shot. Figure out if my jump shot not going tonight and Rick Brooker don't score, the score is still 0-0, so I still got a chance to win. All of this talking about, oh, I got to take a look at the film. Oh, we didn't shoot well tonight. Okay, that's the video coach. So the video coach got to go to the video. He got to sit around. He got to do all his things. Okay, now go back to this thing about motivating players. All of us players who grew up in urban areas, we not passing out trust to nobody. The first time somebody said, not for free. The first time somebody said, if you give me this, I'm going to give you back something. Now, where I'm from, I ain't giving you nothing. You got to earn it. My mother and father ain't giving me nothing. They told me I had to earn it. I had to earn my keep. I learned this in the Police Athletic League in the city of Detroit. The most valuable lesson I learned in how to have a relationship with an adult that I saw as an authority figure, the following. That in the Police Athletic League with all the kids that play in Detroit, we come through that league. It was two questions that needed to be asked. The first one, do you want to be coached? Everybody in the room, he went down, this police officer, he was the coach of our team. His name was Joe Tucker. I remember just like it yesterday. I was about 8 years old, 9 years old. Do you want to be coached? He went down the list.
Anybody say no?
Nobody said no. Everybody said yes. He said, if you want to be coached, do I have your permission to tell you the truth? he put that on me. He didn't tell me. He didn't try to make a deal with me, because where we from, we done seen all the bad deals that's made,
right,
and all of it.
Right.
I'm not passing. The coach asked me, give me something. I'm not giving you nothing, man. I don't know you like that.
Yeah.
So when somebody tell me something, hey, man, I got a bridge over there. Oh, sure. Nah. Ask me my permission, Rick Buecher. He asked me, do I have the permission to tell you the truth? And I remember sitting there, man, this guy actually sees me in the room. He actually, an adult actually was talking to me and wanted to hear my view on what I thought and on how I wanted to be handled. And I thought how empowering that was for me, because that gave me the permission to say, this is how I want to be spoken to. Now, when I saw that, okay, I'm not letting them coach MF me. If you MF me, I'm MFing you back because it's mano y mano. So when I hear all of these deal makings and sell jobs, I'm not buying into that sell job. Don't sell me nothing. Ask for my permission. Now, when you, Rick, you and I have worked in offices, what's the sell job? I'm treating people with, you treat me with respect, I'm treating you with respect. It's very simple. You treat others like you want to be treated. It's not a sales job. What's the sales job? I got to buy into something. No, I don't have to buy into anything. I'm here to do a job. You here to do a job. Now, if you can't tell me the truth, Rick, we can't have a relationship. Rick, that's the first rule. If there is no trust, there can be no relationship. So when people start telling me about sales job, when people start telling me about buying in, I ain't bought into nothing. I didn't buy into the triangle. I didn't buy into anything. I didn't buy into anything. Phil Jackson did his job. BJ did his job. The other players on the team did their job. This guy did his job. And I respected him. He respected me. And we trusted the fact that, you know what? We're going to do our job.
See, now, all but there's that word. There's that word. You trusted.
No.
You had to trust. You had to trust that if you did your job, that it would be rewarded. That you weren't going to be doing your job for reason.
Let me define trust. I trusted them to do what they said they were going to do, which was prepare me and give me every opportunity to perform in that game. I didn't see most of us put all our focus in the results. I put all my focus and trust in the effort. Just give me a chance, Rick Bucher, because you don't know. That triangle offense
is not going. You can't guarantee the result.
That triangle offense didn't guarantee me nothing. Just you laid a path out to me and walked beside me, and at the end of this battle, we'll figure out how it turned out. That's my trust. Don't tell me, well, if I shoot 1,000 shots, I'm going to become a great shooter. No, you just lay out to me the process. I'm going to put all my focus and energy on the process, and then we can talk about the results of it.
Look, I get that. But I think that what Hubie was saying and what Joe Tucker said are very similar things, and they may have been communicated.
Maybe. And like I said, I have the utmost respect for Hubie Brown. When you speak to Hubie, I think Hubie, Coach Brown, is one of the great basketball minds that I've ever encountered.
The problem that I have, though, is when he does a broadcast, he's spouting statistics. And I'm like, Hubie, you know the game so much better than that.
But the thing that I've also learned is the vernacular in which we speak when he was coaching, and today's vernacular is a different vernacular. In that era, in the 70s, you didn't really question authority like you do today. It's a different time. So I'm not comparing of his use of vernacular to today, because the way we communicated in the 90s and the way I listen to young kids today is a total different vernacular. Therefore, how can I communicate to empower people? The key word, how do I empower today's youth so that we can have this level of communication, which leads to cooperation? Because if you can't communicate, you can't cooperate. I'm not getting caught up in the words. I'm getting caught up in, can Coach Brown say, you know what? Him and I can have a truthful conversation with each other without it interfering with us doing our job. That, to me, is what excellence is all about. However, whatever terms you want to use it, you want to play it safe, you want to call it trust, you want to call it whatever you want to call it. But I know today, I got to be able to communicate if I'm going to coach these young people today and speak to them in the way they speak. Because if I don't do that, Rick Bucher, I don't have a chance. And all I want is a chance. That's all I ask for.
If you can't communicate, you can't cooperate.
Now you're talking
Thank
my
you,
language.
Reverend Armstrong.
Well, it's not being a reverend. It's just making sure that we understand that, you know what? I don't expect none of these kids to be. Look, I'm not taking some kid from Compton, California, and I'm going to say, hey, I want you to buy into something. That kid didn't grow up where that's not how you think. Who thinks like that? So then, well, I hear people say it all the time. Oh, they're buying into his philosophy. What is this? A Jedi mind trick? What is this, like Star Wars? Wait a minute. So the kids that are playing, they don't have the capacity to think to themselves. They got to be. It's got to be a con job.
No, it's not. But it's not, see, I don't see it as a con job. I see it as And you're right in that you need to engage with somebody. You need to get their participation. You need to get them to believe in what it is that you're trying to do. So you need to have that conversation. I'm not trying to sell you. Selling it is to me the wrong way, because selling suggests that there's an inherent dishonesty in there. Like, I'm trying to get you to buy something that's not really worth the price that I've put on it.
Let's cut through it. Let's ask the listeners, do they give us the permission to tell them the truth?
Well,
and if they're listening,
yeah,
and if they say yes, then Rick, we just empower them, because now we have an opportunity to communicate.
And if you can't communicate, you can't cooperate.
Now you're talking.
All right. So once again, another podcast has gone by. We haven't gotten to half of the things that we wanted to get to. I wanted to talk about Team USA. I wanted to talk about some of the crazy places that you've been, that I've been, as a result of basketball, or maybe not because of basketball, just took a wrong turn someplace. But we have come to our limit. We can't make these endless. So we will save those. And your fear of technology having subsided, not fear, your challenge with technology, we believe that we've gotten around that. We're ready to send you off to Rio, and we will be doing a podcast from Rio. We will have boots on the ground. You will tell us what it's really like there. We will get into Team USA, because a lot of the themes that we talked about here, I could make the transition. Summer League and the questions about what it's become, I have the same questions about Team USA and what we're doing with our national program. But we will save that for the next podcast. This is BJ and Bucher. BJ, travel safe, and we will talk to you next week.
See you next week.